Today's episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join myself, Adam Armbrecht, and Doug Norrie Thursday night, 6 p.m., as we'll be right back in on a session where you, the fans, can interact with us, chop it up about all things Brooklyn. And again, only one beat need be mentioned. Bruce Brown. He is, of course, another shrewd offseason move by GM Sean Marks that comes over to Brooklyn and really fills an absolutely unexpected and unique role on this Nets roster. But heading into restricted free agency, will Sean Marks dip his hands into Joseph Tsai's deep, deep pockets for a little extra cheddar as we look at Bruce Brown's value to the Brooklyn Nets, value on the open market, and expectations for his offseason and potential return to Brooklyn. It's all coming up. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator at DFSR.com. If you need some projections for MLB, they're on the All-Star break, but right when they come back, you head on over to DFSR.com. We'll have football and NBA up there when those sports are in season. And that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, the host of the One Giant Podcast, where he and his boy Andy Mack are getting you set for the New York Giants regular season right around the corner. I can't believe it. Buddy, how are we doing as we gear up for a Wednesday of Brooklyn Nets talk?
Feeling good, looking powerful. You can't tell because we're on a podcast, but trust me, I'm in peak physical off-season condition. I want to throw that out there, everybody. I'm basically in USA Olympic form right now, minus the results that we've been seeing from the team.
It's surprising to hear you say that because I saw you pretty recently. Now, I'm not going to say I'm not in this shape either, but it's interesting that you would call what that Olympic shape. It makes me actually think, what would happen if you actually stood next to an Olympic person? Like, what would happen to your ego? I feel like it would take a bit of a blow.
if I were to refine it, I might say I'm in a shape right now. And there's no reason to go into deeper detail.
Maybe like two or three curlers at the Winter Olympics that you could maybe stand next to.
There you go. All
right, we're going to...
I could be used as a volleyball in some settings. Never mind.
All right, we are rolling through the offseason. We had questions about every single player on the roster. We've been, which is pretty unique, I think, from the where the Nets stand. We were able to, we did a wrap-up show, I think last week, talking about, just the brief questions about each player. And we've been going through each guy here systematically. And some we did it twice, Dinwiddie, because new information comes around and you have to reevaluate stuff as you get handed new information. Talked about Joe Harris and kind of where he stands. We talked about the big three and the goal to re-sign them. And now we are going to talk about Bruce Brown, because Bruce Brown is another one of these guys that is a free agent that we, as Nets fans, I think came to become endeared to this guy pretty damn quickly when he started playing in a very certain way. But it leaves the Nets in an interesting spot here with Bruce Brown that we're going to kind of get into about what his value is, what his open market value is, what his team value is, kind of like where he started with the Nets and where he came. It's a fascinating case here with Bruce Brown over the course of a season. But I guess we can talk first about how the Nets acquire them, because even that felt like an absolute windfall.
Yeah, I mean, listen, dial it back, right, to last offseason when the Nets are sitting there and we're ramping up around everything, the draft and what are the Nets going to do with picks, and we know they start to really shuffle the deck here and work out some deals to bring in some talent. But inside of that, there's a young player, and it's not to put any disrespect on anyone's name, but Musa was not exactly living up to expectations for Brooklyn Nets fans. And he also was a carryover from the pre-Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant era, where all of a sudden you're thinking about how do pieces fit the best around your superstars. So he's on the roster. And Sean Marks goes ahead and just dials up Detroit, because if you're looking to make a deal and maybe fleece somebody, Detroit's probably who you want to call. And he says, listen, I'll throw you a future second-round pick and a guy that we literally may just as well have cut at some point. to go ahead and grab ourselves a Bruce Brown. And at the, even at the time, by the way, when the deal went down, I almost feel like I specifically remember you saying, like, this is a steal. Almost no matter what the player was that you got back, it felt like a steal because you were unloading a prospect that didn't pan out for you, and you had no intention of retaining, let alone what Bruce Brown goes on to become.
Yeah, it wasn't a full home run at the time, I don't think. It was a clear, I think we graded the trade at the time as an A, because Jonathan Musa wasn't really, didn't seem to appear to have any future with the team, and second round picks are second round picks, so, like, whatever. But what they got in Bruce Brown, and it's funny because he's totally different than what I thought they were getting. What he had been with Detroit was this sort of like hybrid, I guess he's still hybrid-y, at times ball handler. He played point guard for a bunch of starts with Detroit. Now, that was more out of their own personnel being really lacking. And so it was sort of more about their personnel and less about his skills. But the fact that he was just kind of even slotted into the position to begin with really kind of says a lot about what his skill set is. So I thought what they were doing, and then, you know, graded out pretty high defensively, big wingspan for his overall size. And so I thought, yeah, it was just the kind of dice roll to take at the time. Now, in retrospect, we liked the trade at the time. Going back and looking at how things played out, I mean, it was an A plus and add a few more pluses. Like, it was such a good trade there for the Nets. I mean, so lopsided. And the Nets have been on the right side of a lot of these over the years. So it's just not an act. They haven't luck boxed their way into trades. They just seem to often get the better side of just about everything they've done. Which has to have other GMs like a little bit wary about when they call asking about something. But the
I've got a deal for you. Oh, no, not again, buddy. Not this time, you son of a.
The way it played out, where we're talking about him now in terms of sort of the Nets hierarchy, and you know what we're going to discuss here about what the value is for him and what he does for the Nets. If you just, like I said, just to go back to where it started, it was such a massive home run for the team. What he ended up becoming for this team was so important. They gave up nothing to get him. I don't know if Musa even got off the bench and played any time this season. If it was, it was not much. So
hold up the stat box. He did not log a minute.
Yeah, so he might even be not even on the active roster anymore. Either way, it was just such a massive win, and it really, Bruce Brown ended up becoming one of the feel good stories for the entire year. And so, just from that standpoint, as a Nets fan, it's like, before we even get into the money part of it and the role and everything, it is one of these guys. I'm not saying you want to overpay him, because I don't think that's a good business decision. But it would be a bummer if he wasn't back on the team, and I would still understand if and why it didn't happen. But it was like he became sort of like that guy for the Nets this year, I thought. And whatever happens with him, we can grade the trade as an A. He got himself a lot more money and than he probably would have gotten if he had stayed on Detroit. And just from that perspective, it was just such a massive win.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'll save some of the stat pieces here for a minute. And I think just to your point, though, the Nets fans that go back beyond, that aren't bandwagon fans, as we've debated and talked about
like
it over
me.
The course of the podcast, but fans that have been around. Well, yeah, but even, you know, but there's a difference, though, too. You came on board as someone who's analyzing this team, throwing shade at my own co-host. Back that one up a little bit. That's no problem, though. But no, when you think about the things that Nets fans have always liked, and even you from afar, you know, as you look back at Nets teams, you go, I've highlighted this time after time, the grit, the hustle plays. There's always been these kind of guys that have been emblematic of some level of the personality and that big word, culture, that the Brooklyn Nets have always wanted to have. So when you go out and you add the superstars and free agency, you still do look at the roster and say, well, how do we still present that mentality? Who's going to do some of the dirty work for us? And to your point, you maybe don't know looking at what Bruce Brown was doing in Detroit and think that he can be that guy. And then all of a sudden, for the Nets, because he's allowed to, I think, lean into specific areas of his game when you have that much talent ahead of you on the roster, it emerges. That element all of a sudden becomes a bonus to what you're getting in him. And I think that it's your point. Like, we'll get into the money, but you need these guys. You love having these guys, at least. Like, I'm sure there is this interchangeable kind of perspective that GMs will tell you or scouts will say, well, look at the numbers. You can get this guy on the scrap heaps from somewhere else. But in the same vein of a Spencer Dinwiddie, of a Joe Harris, I think Bruce Brown now falls into that category of the Nets identifying talent that is being undervalued and utilized somewhere else and understanding how well they can fit in to their roster and to what they want to accomplish.
Oh, totally. I totally agree. It sort of identifies him. It just endears you to him as a player. And we're going to get into some of how the year went for him and why the numbers are going to look the way they are when it comes to his current contract, the contract he's going to get next. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Green Room. This episode is brought to you by Green Room. It's the first social audio platform made for sports fans. You're hearing about it everywhere, folks, and that's for a reason. It's awesome. We're going to be on Green Room Thursday at 6 p.m. Had a great turnout last time. Super fun. Talked about Joe Harris. We'll be talking about a bunch of other Nets stuff this week. And so make sure you go over and download the free Green Room app. And once you're in, you can talk with us, other fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team, the Nets or sport, basketball. It's the perfect place to start or join the conversation about the league. You'll find fans just like you on Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to all the big news and rumors. Like I said, be sure to join Adam and I. This week, we'll be hosting a Green Room on Thursday at 6 p.m. Currently available on all iOS devices. You go over there, you download the app, create a profile, link your Twitter, join the NBA groups, follow us at LockedOnNets. You'll be notified when our room goes live. You're not going to want to miss it. Green Room, changing the way we talk about sports. All right, so one other thing I wanted to highlight here before we get into some of the stats and just where the contract might end up going, what the Nets might be looking at if they want to re-sign him, is just as a reminder, because it's so easy to forget, Bruce Brown had a really weird season. Like, it ended up being great, but almost even the playoff series against the Bucks was emblematic of sort of how his season went. Because if you remember, and it's hard to remember this at times, or easy to forget, is that at the beginning of the season, he was kind of totally buried. Like, he really didn't play early on in the season. He barely played the first three games. He was a full DNP for a 3 or 4 game stretch back in December. And then when they get some injuries, Dinwiddie gets hurt, and then they had some guard issues, and they were kind of just started experimenting with rotations. And that's where you started to see him at least coming off the bench, and he'd have some of these random games where, like, randomly against the Knicks, he, like, double-doubled with a 15-14 in a win, right? And that kind of came out of nowhere, and he started to get excited. But then there'd be times where it would just disappear again, right? Like, it was just – it kind of didn't get a lot more consistent for him until well after the Harden trade, and that pairing worked really well, and they sort of then – redefined what it was they wanted to do for him. But even going into the playoffs, like the Milwaukee series, if you remember, game 6 he played 5 minutes, and then game 7 he played 52 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, I thought those last two games were sort of kind of summed up the Bruce Brown season in some way. And that was like, it worked really well in some situations, not as well in others. And then when it was all said and done, they needed him to play a ton, right? So I don't know. It's interesting because it's easy to remember sort of like what he was in the hole in the aggregate, but it wasn't 100% consistent all season.
Yeah, no, and I think that you're right. And even before I get into the stats from Detroit to Brooklyn and the impact of that, the timeline doesn't line up perfectly around this, but the James Harden impact, we've said this about a lot of different players on the roster. We're going to get to Nicholas Claxton at a certain point here in our offseason and talk about how he looked this year. But I do feel like early in the year, there's a lot of pieces to this. One, it's the rookie head coach, and now you're bringing in new players. Remember, Kevin Durant hadn't played yet. You have Kyrie there. You're trying to figure out this complement of rotation around these two guys, and I just wonder if, because I think I remember at the time saying we were surprised that we weren't seeing Bruce Brown after we kind of got ourselves excited about him when they acquired him, but I wondered if maybe it just came down to, from a coaching perspective, where you just said, well, player X is going to get a run here. And we're going to give them a healthy run. Because remember, we always talked about the regular season as kind of being this just gradual building process, figuring how things fit together before the ultimate playoff run that, as we know, got derailed from injuries. But in that regard, I just wonder if it was almost a coin flip kind of scenario of, yeah, maybe Shamit's going to see more early and Bruce Brown isn't. You could have flip-flopped that and the results may have come out in the total run of the year. But it was, at the very least, to your point, a very up and down season for Bruce Brown, just from a consistency and minutes standpoint. And I'd be very curious if we were to project him returning to the team, how do the familiar faces end up looking from a minute share standpoint as you move along? Because you even mentioned the playoffs there. Again, Harden, Kyrie, injuries, right? Jeff Green goes out. So all of a sudden, even from just a coaching staff perspective, you don't automatically go, well, Bruce Brown, you'll get 25 minutes. You almost start to say, do we need to shuffle this? Do we need to do it differently? And the guy you're not going to do it differently with is Kevin Durant. Joe Harris, even with his struggles, right? Because these are the staples of your offense. Bruce Brown, well, we don't know. We're trying to figure out what can get us through these first couple of rounds potentially as we get hit with injuries that we weren't anticipating. So it's interesting. I don't know if that, does that resonate with you, I guess, before I go stats here? Does that ring any bells for you in terms of the Nets as a team not necessarily fully knowing how they would utilize Bruce Brown when they first acquired him?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think that was the thing that came out, and it was when they realized that he was going to effectively play like center on offense, right? Which we haven't even talked about right now, but like he ends up becoming essentially their offensive center. He became amazing in the short role. He was kind of like just deadly on these floaters at times. He barely took any outside shots at all season because his shot, if you look at his shot chart, it's like so much in the paint. It's unbelievable that he's, you, if you looked at his shot chart, you'd never believe he was, you know, 6'4" or whatever he is.
Right.
It doesn't look like that. Or you think he was like 6'4", but it was on his high school basketball team because he basically played center. Cause like, right. that's what it would look like. And so it ends up becoming this thing where, and actually, you know, before we just hold up the stats for 1 second, let's just talk about this now. So the issue with him is that he became something, like you said, totally different than what the Nets expected, and probably totally different than what the league expected. And therefore, because of that, it's almost like the opposite of Dinwiddie, in that we said it's hard to judge like Dinwiddie's like value for the team this year because he didn't play with this group of guys, really, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to know. It's hard to know exactly. Like, we know what Spencer Dinwiddie's value is on the open market. I think that's pretty clear. But what we don't know is what his value on the is to this team at the certain number, because there's no sort of baseline for it. The opposite is true for Bruce Brown. We actually don't know what his open open market value is, because what he did for this group was so unique, and we know exactly what it looks like, right? Like, there's no question mark about what Bruce Brown looks like on this team. That is pretty much figured out. But now it's a weird math of, like, how do other teams view that? Because they don't have the same personnel as the Nets. And when you don't have the same personnel as the Nets, like, I don't know, is Bruce Brown an $8 million a year guy? Like, I don't even know. Like, well, I know what he's worth to the Nets now. And that is where it's just so funny. Like I said, it's like the opposite. It's almost the polar opposite of the Spencer Dinwiddie situation, in that the question marks are just about all the opposite stuff.
Yeah, no, and listen, just quickly here, if I may, a unique season, you may even call it a surprising performance from Bruce Brown. And that's why today on the road to the finals, the NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. We can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. I think I will push back a little bit. I think I agree with everything that you're saying. And also, you said something at the top about Bruce Brown and his time in Detroit that I think we have yet to see, and I believe, were he to return, you may see the Nets scratch back into a skill set that he was showcasing in his final year in Detroit. So I actually think that the way that he was used this year is unique to this season for Brooklyn. When you take into the account of a DeAndre Jordan and what he was or was not, when you talk about trying to bring along a young player in Nicholas Claxton, and then ultimately the up and down, in and out from some of this rotation, including losing Spencer Dinwiddie for the entire year. So I do want to throw a couple of interesting thoughts around what he could be as we get into potential contract, him coming back, and if we ultimately, you know, you guys can guess, do you think we want Bruce Brown to be back? I'm leaning towards yes, but I'm still technically on the fence.
I mean, again, with Dinwiddie, the answer is definitely yes. Like, so it's not the yes-no part of do you want the guy on the team.
Right.
It's not that. It's unfortunately, now it becomes like a numbers game, and you have to evaluate what it is that you can effectively pay for the payoff. And this is what's really becoming very difficult, as we're finding, as we're going through each guy, or, you know, and specifically around these two guys, is what is, you know, what's the true market, what's the true value, and what's the number? You know, Nets have shown they're probably willing to go a little above set numbers, like they did probably that with Harris in the offseason. And, you know, I think they're willing to do it at times, but now they're in a it's a trickier situation now where the numbers, like you said, with the cap, where every number becomes a number plus the tax, yeah. Right? And so you're paying a little bit more for each guy. We'll get into this, what we think he could command on the open market here. But first, got to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar. Bruce Brown might have eaten a Built Bar too this year based on the season that he had. That's because they have all the good stats that you want out of the very best protein bar out there. All the best flavors to start. Cherry Barcia, mint brownie, salted caramel, strawberry, cookies and cream. A little something for every flavor palette there. And then you get into the actual health stats. Oh my goodness, 17 grams of protein, calories from 130 to 180. Love to see that. Only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, just 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors. They're all super tasty, all healthy, good to go, and really any flavor, like I said, any flavor palette you want. Built Bar has got something for you. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You're going to get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at built.com.
And you might as well get locked on to betonline.ag. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. As we know, the baseball home run derby just went off. You could have thrown a few shekels down. You could have had local hero Pete Alonso stroking the long ball there. And you can track all that action over at BetOnline. Get the latest news, odds, and info on all your sporting needs from baseball, NBA, NHL, and even your UFC and MMA action too. Before the next pitch, before the next tip, before the next golf stroke on the links, get over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get in on the game as all these teams either continue, conclude, or prepare for playoff and season runs. Head over to the website or use that mobile device and sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, promo code LOCKEDON. So quickly, I'll run through. There's a lot of things actually to get to here. It feels like Bruce Brown is worthy of more than just one episode. And friends, we may end up doing a little bit extra if we need to. The first thing is the stat numbers. You had talked about the effective him in the paint, and I wanted to throw out his effective field goal percentage was 58%, and his 2-point field goal percentage was almost 60, was basically 60%. That's more indicative of a 5 being in and around the rim during the course of a season, which is what he was. But just to give you, and this is the impact of playing with superstars, but Bruce Brown came over from Detroit, had a very different role, yes. He played 6 less minutes per game, scored the same number of points, increased his total rebounds, increased his steals per minute ratio, and also reduced his turnovers by almost half. So even though in just 6 less minutes, he was even more effective, more under control, also not handling the ball as much. So that plays a role there too. All to say that when you bring this guy in, the expectations of how you're going to utilize him were probably defensive minded first, and to still get actually a higher level of effectiveness from him had to have opened up the Brooklyn Nets' eyes in that regard. The other piece that I want to get to, and I'll be brief so I can get your take on it, is I actually think that based on what happens with Spencer Dinwiddie, I wouldn't be surprised if Brooklyn looks at Bruce Brown as a guy who can handle the ball coming up the court. And I actually think depending on how this offseason goes for Brooklyn, and assuming that they choose to bring him back, we'll get into the numbers, that they will look at him as a guy in the second unit that they can trust to have the ball in his hands and pseudo be executing the offense based on the rotations and who else is on the floor with him.
I'm not willing to go that far with him. Only because
I don't mean big spots. You know, I'm not going big shares, but yeah. I just think you'll see it in a way that we didn't really at all see it this season.
Yeah, I probably would pause on that one only because I don't think it's a bad thing to like kind of project out for him because we know he has that in his skill set. But just in general, it's hard for me to see only because they just have these other ball handlers on the team. But that effective field goal percentage, by the way, you said it was 58%. That would have put him like top 30 in the league. I don't think he qualified because he didn't play enough minutes. But in general, like just because I'm just looking at the qualified players, and that would have put him somewhere around 30. So And again, effective field goal percentage, unless you're like the Kevin Durant of the world or like amazing at three pointers, like, you know, Joe Harris and Joe, I was going to say Joe Ingles, but that's not exactly right. But well, he was good this year. I mean, these guys, those are usually the two subsets of groups of that, that are really good in this stat because you're either making high volume three pointers or you're just dunking the ball. So he's again, sitting in this other weird category because he didn't really do either. And he was still just so damn effective. All right, let's make a prediction here. So, where do you see, what do you think happens with Bruce Brown here? Like, what would be your guess? We've seen people throw out $8 million a year, something like that, for probably, you know, 2 to 3 years, maybe up to 12. I've seen projected, that's, these are just guesses. I've seen other teams write about him as a free agent, that where they would fit in. There's a Pelicans article, you know, saying that he would fit in nicely with their group of guys. These are definitely a guy that other teams, I think, are talking about. He made him, he entered, made himself part of the conversation by, you know, playing pretty well in the playoffs and just playing pretty well all season. Like, what do you think ends up happening with him if you had to just guess right now, knowing that what we're talking about now is strictly a guess?
Yeah, and I mean, there was some, I was reading, you know, anonymous GMs or executives around the league saying this is a guy that played to a $10 million value this past year, but is probably not worth that much in real dollars. But I think that the Nets, at least to some extent, look at him the way that Joe Harris was looked at. That we like this guy. We love the way he played for us. We're going to bring him back. It's about coming to the right dollar amount. The difference here for me is probably going to be that he is a restricted free agent, so the Nets can control it. I wouldn't be surprised if a team makes an offer and the Nets go ahead and match it. Like within, you know, within reason, unless some team is going to come out of left field with a really big number, I think the Nets are willing to let the market tell Bruce Brown and tell them where he's, where his value is at this offseason. And then they'll go ahead and say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense for me. I, you know, can I see them coming to the table early and trying to get a deal done ahead of time? Sure. And would Bruce Brown reward the fact that the money he's going to make is all predicated on how the Nets chose to use him? I think so. But my assumption is he's back. That I'll put it that way. I assume he's back. I assume the number is going to be, I'll say, closer to 8 than 12. But if they split it down the middle and went with 10 per year on a 3-year deal, I wouldn't be shocked, and I'd be ecstatic to have him back.
It's so crazy, man. It's so funny with these guys. These Nets just hit, they don't hit home runs on everyone, right? They've sent plenty of guys out the door that haven't worked out. But we just continue to talk about these guys that were. I say the word nobodies, and that's pejorative in a way that I don't mean. It's more about just like they were. They were worth much less before the Nets got them, right? And then the Nets, like we said with Dinwiddie, are the victims of their own success with this stuff, is that they just play almost every guy that's worth it out of the contract that they had him on. it's so funny about how they just seems to continue to happen. Now, sometimes they go a different route. You know, with D'Lo, they send them out in a sign-and-trade because he outplayed what they wanted him to do, and you know, they saw that they could get something back and that he wasn't going to be part of their long-term future. But even guys at that level, they did it, right? Like, they just continue to just bring guys in and then get them to be much better than they were before. And then they have to decide if it's going to be worth it or not to keep them around at the number that they've worked them up to. And Bruce Brown's like that now. And so, yeah, I agree with you about the part where they match. They have bird rights on him still. And so they're in a good situation because of where they got him from Detroit. They are able to sort of control more years on the contract, and they're able to, like you said, match any offer that comes around. So if they let the market set, you hope that some team doesn't go totally crazy with this. I hope it for Bruce Brown so he gets paid, right? Like, I want him to get every single dollar. He definitely deserved it. Will there be some team that's out there that just makes some sort of like weird godfather offer to him? Maybe. I do think that his skill set makes me feel like that might not happen. You know what I mean? Like, he just doesn't.
Yes, that's the biggest part to me. He fits very well specifically to the Nets with the superstars that they have and the role that they need him to play, even if I think it could be malleable a little bit next season. Other teams, especially you'd say like contending teams, there's two factors. Contending teams that look at a player like him and say, do we not already have that in some form or facet? You know, do we not already have a lot of the rebounding and some of that defensive hustle plays that we want? Maybe we already have that on the roster. We don't need to go shopping for it. And then the other piece is Bruce Brown is not your traditional 3-and-D guy. he's not a three guy. You know, he shot about a little over 30% in Detroit, dropped under with the Nets this past season. So I think that that is a negative on him when you talk about the market, because I do think teams around the league are still going to look at him and say, man, look what he did. They'll also acknowledge the uniqueness of the circumstance and say that when you pull back and you look at the skill set, it's not exactly just an easy plug him in and he'll do X, Y, and Z for us automatically based on our current roster. You know, so I do think the Nets could benefit from that. And maybe, like you said, outside of a big offer out on the market, maybe the Nets even get lucky and it's a relatively team-friendly deal. And maybe the Nets give him the extra years that gives Bruce Brown the extra money and helps spread it out so it doesn't necessarily hurt the Nets as much from a cap and luxury tax standpoint.
Yeah, I think that's what we end up seeing. Something like that is something that where the market gets tested a little bit. I'm not positive. I hope a lot of times these guys can kind of, they can test the market. They can back channel test the market ahead of time too. Like they can kind of know. A team will sometimes be honest with this stuff around a player just to signal like, would you take the deal? You know, something like that.
Right.
Like I don't think it's not all just guesswork at this point. And so when you reach this kind of level where you're able to sort of get a lay of the land ahead of time. Like we've seen this with Dinwiddie. Like these guys don't pull these numbers out of nowhere, right? Like there's talk and there's discussion with their agents and things like that that will at least lay a something of a groundwork for where they can begin to think about it. But I do think, like, you know, as you said, is that the situation just becomes so unique to the Nets that it might be a situation where Bruce Brown gets paid much more than I think anyone would have thought he would have coming out of Detroit, right? But maybe less than what the value was that he provided to the Nets this year, right? Or whatever, like, that dollar number ends up landing on. And so I think in that situation, you could see him coming back and maybe he says, hey, my best chance is, yeah, like you said, take an extra year here, take a little more money in the back end, maybe backload something a little bit so that it doesn't hurt the cap early, but we're kind of paying for, you know, we'll take the hit later when, you know, your skill set's declining or the teams are sort of out of it and, you know, they're past the timeline of the big three or something like that, because that is all part of the discussion. It's like a lot of this stuff has to fit into the current timeline as well. And if you know that he already fits really well into the timeline, then it is worth a few more bucks than it's going to be on the open market. But yeah, it's just going to, it might be one of these in between situations. All right, we're going to get out of here.
By the way, knowing that he's only 24 years old, he can also benefit from saying, I can go ahead and keep playing with these superstars for another 3 or 4 years and then, you know, affirm what my value is and really go get something, you know, on the upper teens kind of number from somewhere else, because some teams may look at this as being a fluke, but once you see it 3-4 years in a row, all of a sudden you get into, you know, that critical seventh man on the bench kind of role that the league desires and championship teams desire. So I think Bruce Brown's in a great spot, and obviously bring him back, Brooklyn.
I will say one more thing too. He kind of strikes me as a player that it feels like right now is probably his peak value. Like, I think that right this moment is where Bruce, I'd love to be wrong about this, for sure. But based on sort of what we've seen from him already, and he's very talented, I do think his value, unless he were to really develop another totally different part of his game out of maybe nowhere, or like have a couple things improve very quickly, I do think the chances of his number being lower next year are more than being higher, right? Like, if I were to have to bet on that outcome, I just think
you're probably right. Short of him improving three-point shooting, right? Short of that's probably the only thing. Yeah,
like significantly.
He'd have to go mid-30s or better change that. Yeah,
I know he didn't take any, but he shot 29% on the few that he took. This is just not the kind of player that usually works, right? And so, like I said, I'm glad that it's happening for him. I'm glad that he's going to be able to secure almost definitely some very good money here. But I do think if I were to guess that part of the equation is this has to be, it'd be hard to imagine this value going crazy up. And he's still young enough, so I, again, happy to be wrong about that. Okay, we're going to get out of here. Like I said, we'll be on Locker Room Thursday evening. That'll be for the Friday show. So you'll get another show in between here that we can remind you about. But just another reminder, we'll be on Locker Room at 6 o'clock on Thursday evening. Tomorrow we'll break down some of Game 4, what we see from Bucks and Suns, and then we'll talk more Nets news. Got some, like you said, we've got some coaching stuff that turned over here. We've got some more USA basketball. Like, guys lost again to Australia. It's so weird. So we got a lot more to talk about. In the meantime, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Write a little review if you can. We really appreciate it. Rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts.
And of course, next week, the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, will be coming your way. It's featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, as well as Odyssey NBA expert Brian Scalabrini and former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts will be making selections and trades for your favorite team, the Brooklyn Nets, throughout the week-long special event. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY. Bruce Brown is a player that does the hustle. Oh, do it. Oh, do it. Do it. Do the hustle. Do the hustle. Van McCoy.
Oh, Van McCoy, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again
Do it.
Tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.